Good morning, one and all. Welcome to the Damage Report. I'm John Arella. Very excited to be coming to you once again with a full day of news. And very soon, a very exciting guest is going to be joining us. We have a lot to talk about today, everyone. I'm going to need you to prepare yourself. Thankfully, while we have a number of different news stories that I think are deeply distressing, they don't hit you in the face as hard as some of the sorts of news that we have. It's even kind of a little bit of fun, some of these. So while you still do need to hold on to your butts, you do still need to prepare yourselves, not as much as in some cases. So relax just a little bit on this fine Thursday. We're going to be talking about Clarence Thomas. Turns out he might be a little corrupt. And I know what you're thinking, wait, is it like Groundhog's Day? Haven't we already talked about that? Oh yes, we have many times, but all of this is new and we will be jumping into it. We also have Donald Trump's updated defense when it comes to the E. Jean Carroll civil rape lawsuit that he's facing. We got some video of Trump responding to what's going on. And Herschel Walker back in the news. Kind of thought we were done with Herschel Walker, but we are not, however, done with Herschel Walker's potential crimes. We're going to be talking about that, and then we've got other exciting news too. And definitely stick around for the aftermath, everyone. So if you're on linear platforms or on the podcast, know that you can always go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thedamageport, and see extra bonus content that you might have been missing this whole time. Because we're going to be diving into AI. There is a lot going on. Things are changing fast. Dark Brandon has now gotten involved with AI. So we've got that, people defending Tucker Carlson and a whole lot more. So along the way, if you want to comment on any of these stories, let us know about breaking news as it develops. Maybe make a little joke, see if you can get a chuckle. You can send us comments, tweets, super chats and all that. And myself and my mystery guest will respond as we go. You also, by the way, will have a chance at a $100 Blue Apron gift card. And I just made this shrimp dish from Blue Apron yesterday. It was delicious. So if you can get in on that, it's worth the comment. So send those in and I'll respond as we go. But with all that said, I'm ready to start the show. So why don't we jump into this thing? Oh, Clarence Thomas, you've been a really, really bad boy, it turns out, in increasingly novel ways. Here's a fun one where he's benefited from his incredibly close lucrative relationship with GOP mega donor Harlan Crowe. Back in 2008, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas decided to send his teenage grandnephew, who according to him, he was raising like a son, to Hidden Lake Academy, a private boarding school in the foothills of northern Georgia. Now, you need to understand that tuition at this boarding school ran more than $6,000 a month in 2008. Dear Lord, these people live lives unlike ours. But here's the interesting thing. Despite that very big bill, it was not Clarence Thomas who actually footed it. In fact, thanks to the analysis and investigation of ProPublica, we got this little document where we actually found out who was paying the $6,200 a month. And do you see it? If you zoom in and enhance grid G6, you can see Crowe Holdings. And you might think, isn't that one of the criminal organizations from Batman? Probably, I haven't seen all of that. I can't attest to that. But what it is Harlan Crowe's business, one of them. And so once again, Harlan Crowe to the rescue when the disaster is Clarence Thomas having to pay for things for himself. So a bank statement for the school from July 2009 buried in unrelated court filing shows that that was the person who paid Martin's tuition for that month. But here's the thing, it wasn't just $6,200, as distressing as that would potentially be. The payments extended well beyond that month, according to Christopher Grimwood, former administrator at the school. Crowe paid Martin's tuition the entire time he was a student there, which was about a year. But even that isn't all of it. Before and after his time at Hidden Lake, where I think they make ranch dressing, Martin attended a second boarding school, Randolph Macon Academy in Virginia, which again sounds like the sort of place that incredibly wealthy, privileged people go. Harlan said he was paying for the tuition at Randolph Macon Academy as well, according to Grimwood, recalling a conversation he had with Crowe during a visit to the billionaire's Adirondack estate. Isn't it nice to have an estate? Do you appreciate your estate on a daily basis? You should give some respect to your estate. Anyway, by the way, the school administrator is going to the billionaire's estate. This is all just so incestuous and dirty. In any event, the exact amount that Crowe paid for Martin's education over the years and through multiple fancy private schools remains unclear. But if he paid for all 4 years at the two schools, the price tag could have exceeded $150,000, according to public records of tuition rates at the schools from that time. So you might be wondering, why would this guy be paying potentially $150,000 for the grandnephew of one of his buddies? Well, whatever the reason is, we know what it isn't, and that is corruption. So get that right out of your mind. His office sent a message saying, it's disappointing that those with partisan political interests would try to turn helping at-risk youth with tuition assistance into something nefarious and political. Look, if we could normalize billionaires spending their wealth to help at-risk youth rather than all of the nonsense that they get up to, I would be fine with that. And is that in some sense what this is? Maybe. But there's a lot of measures that can be taken to protect this at-risk youth that don't, I think, rise to the level of paying many thousands of dollars a month for a number of different private schools, particularly for a guy who, uncle of which was a Supreme Court justice at that point. And so, look, I don't know if you buy what Harlan Crow is saying about why he decided to do this charity in this one case for an incredibly well-connected young kid. But even if you do, that still leaves Clarence Thomas. So what do we think about that? Well, interestingly, Thomas did not report the tuition payments from Crow on his annual financial disclosures. Now, that fits in with everything that Clarence Thomas has done. But here's where it gets interesting. Several years earlier, Thomas disclosed a gift of $5,000 for Martin's education from another friend. It's not clear why he reported that payment, but not Crow's, says ProPublica. And they do need to say that because they're a very responsible journalistic outlet. The rest of us, though, can think it's probably pretty clear why he's in it in the one case and not the other. First of all, it's way more than $5,000. Second of all, it's a guy who has repeatedly had business before the Supreme Court. And so you might have a vested interest in protecting knowledge of one of them and not the other. But before we gloss over that, he got $5,000 from another friend too. I will remind you, Clarence Thomas is a Supreme Court justice. He had been a Supreme Court justice for many years at that point. They make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year just purely based off of their tuition. And they make tons of other money from things like the private teaching gigs that we were talking about earlier this week, as well as speeches and book deals and all of that stuff. Why was Clarence Thomas so desperate to be given money from billionaire buddies to help out his nephew when he definitely has the money to do it himself? That's interesting. Perhaps we'll return to that. And by the way, we're focusing on this most recent development. But if you haven't been following all of the news that's come out, primarily, by the way, to the great credit of ProPublica, thanks to their efforts, here is a little bit of a recap of just some of the distressing news when it comes to the possibility of the perception of corruption when it comes to Clarence Thomas. Last month, they reported that Thomas accepted luxury travel from Crow virtually every year for decades, including international super yacht cruises and private jet flights around the world. Crow also paid money to Thomas and his relatives in an undisclosed real estate deal. After he purchased the house where Thomas's mother lived, he poured tens of thousands of dollars into improving the property, as well as buying neighboring properties, then demolishing them so nobody would live nearby her and play music loud. Roughly 15 years ago, Crow donated much of the budget of a political group founded by Thomas's wife, which paid her a $120,000 salary. He paid, I believe, $500,000, which is an amazing individual donation from one billionaire. And it would be bad enough if that just went to the political activities of Ginny Thomas's PAC. You know, money's money. They don't need to raise it from someone else or spend their own money if they get it from Harlan Crow. But the fact that she was drawing a salary, that is just a transfer of $100,000 a year, $120,000 a year from a right-wing billionaire to the wife of a Supreme Court justice who presumably has a good relationship with that wife. This is a massive, massive multifaceted issue. Millions of dollars being transferred from just one right-wing billionaire who has a long-established vested interest in turning America's judiciary towards a more rightward direction. And we're supposed to just be okay with this. But here's the thing, while I think that's insane, you can probably gather that from my tone, my fear is that a lot of people probably will just be fine with this, because remember when I was going over all the other issues of corruption? They've already accepted super yacht vacations. They already accepted, you know, another $150,000. It's weird how that number keeps popping up in buying the property effectively and then improving it. Just gift after gift after gift, endless hundreds of thousands of dollars. At this point, honestly, we keep asking after each one of these, why did Clarence Thomas not report this? And the answer, I still think the best answer, the easiest answer is because he was attempting to hide it. But we are starting to develop, I think, plausible reasons to believe there's another reason he hasn't reported it. Because he's getting so many gifts that he honestly can't track them all. Like, how are you supposed to keep track of all the vacations and the schools and the houses and the Bibles and the Lincoln busts and the political PAC donations? You know, like, I'm not a big fan of Clarence Thomas, but a person can only hold so many things in their mind. Maybe he just slipped on a few of these. But look, if you're listening to this and you're a right winger, you are obviously predisposed to not care about any of this because Clarence Thomas is a right winger. And look, let's keep it real. You don't care about the corruption. You just care about what he does when he's on the court. Well, I will remind you that while Clarence Thomas has been outed as by far the most corrupt member of the Supreme Court, the rest of the court has not fared well with the news cycle of the past couple of weeks. Not only Neil Gorsuch selling a house to another incredibly wealthy person that had business before the court at, you know, above market rates. Not only the many justices that have been given these incredibly cushy, well-paying, effectively foreign vacations to teach abroad, which does not just include the right-wingers, it includes those nominated by Democrats as well. But we now find out that Sonia Sotomayor also didn't recuse herself from a Penguin book case despite having received $3 million from that publisher. That is obviously a conflict of interest, and she should have recused herself in the same way that Clarence Thomas should have recused himself from any of the business that Harlan Crow had before the court. And I am glad that we know about this. It is yet another reminder that corruption runs deep across the entire court. And I will use this as an opportunity to remind you that every member of the court is insisting that no oversight is needed. They are not going to be testifying before the court. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts has already stated that very clearly. And so this is another reminder that Clarence Thomas is the worst, but they're all pretty bad. But I will also point out that the reason we know about this deal, the Sotomayor thing, is because the right-wing blog Daily Wire reported on it. Now, they're right-wingers. You might think, well, this seems like it's probably just a reason to sort of draw attention away from Clarence Thomas. And if you would like to make that case, you can pretty much just cite the final two paragraphs of their actual reporting, which we're gonna bring up right now. They talk about a seemingly coordinated push in the media to accuse conservative justices of misconduct. They're literally in the process of doing a media push to smear Sotomayor. Rightly, she did it. It should be pointed out. But you're clearly just using it to try to like balance the scales. And they say that, oh, we criticize the Supreme Court more than anyone, even though we're attempting to distract from it right now. And even in that, they say that the media is overreacting about things like Neil Gorsuch selling a house and what's going on with Chief Justice John Roberts. So all of this is like pretending to be oversight, but the end goal is not what it would seem like it should be. If you're participating in needed journalism, unveiling the corruption of the Supreme Court, well, then the end result of it, when we find out that Clarence Thomas is corrupt and oh my God, Neil Gorsuch, and there's the Kavanaugh concerns, and oh Jesus, now Sotomayor, oh God, and Kagan was doing those trips abroad, well, then clearly something needs to happen. That does not appear to be what they're pushing for, even though they are pointing out that Sotomayor has issues. I would like to thank them for their contribution to the story. I think that it is yet more of a reminder that we need far more ethical, not just like guidelines or whatever, but legal ramifications for the sort of corruption that we're seeing. They need to submit to oversight, when justifiable concerns are raised. They don't appear to be pushing for that, but I think reasonable people should. And thankfully, in some cases, like with Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, actually are. Okay, that is your Clarence Thomas Supreme Court corruption update for the day. Tune in tomorrow for more. Okay, I think what we're gonna do is we're gonna take an early break so we can try to link up with our guest for the day, but don't go anywhere because we've got a rapidly developing situation when it comes to the civil rape case against Donald Trump. We're gonna have more on that after this. Welcome back, one and all, if you're just joining us now. Someone else is joining us now. Nina Turner's on the show. Nina, we talked a bit during the break, but for those who listen, you know, on the linear the podcast, it's good to have you here as always. Thank you.
It is so great to be back with you, John.
Great to have you here. I will not accept the silencing of one Nina Turner. Okay. So anyway, glad to hear your voice. Sorry for, you know, the issues. I've been dealing a little bit with like a sore throat too. Yeah. And it's not particularly bad, but you know, ever since 2020, anytime I start to feel a tickle, it's just, I just instantly think, oh dear God, I wonder when that instinct will go away.
I don't know if it ever will. It's gonna haunt us. It's gonna be haunting us for a while, I think.
I am worried about that. Okay, with that said, we've got a lot more news, everyone. If you're just joining us, please hit the like button and we're gonna jump into more news starting with this.
Mr. Trump, why are you here instead of in New York for your civil case, please?
Because we have a long-standing agreement to come here. We've had a tremendous reception, a beautiful reception. The people of Ireland have been great and we have a tremendous success. And I hear we're doing very well in New York.
But does it not show disrespect to the courts, Mr. Trump?
Okay, so that is what passes for the former president of the United States official statement on the civil rape trial that he is currently facing in New York. He hears that we're doing quite good. Okay, well, he had previously already had his legal team be warned by the judge that they need to rein him in for his deranged social media posts about this. I don't know if that's maybe what he's referencing when he says that we're doing well. They've spent the past couple of days viciously attacking E. Jean Carroll for every way that in their view she has failed to live up to their ever-changing expectations of what the perfect unicorn survivor of sexual assault should act like and speak like and when they should speak out about it and when they shouldn't. And I don't think that's received a great reception, that legal strategy, so I'm not sure if that's what he's referencing. They also apparently are gonna present no witnesses in this trial, although they will be able to refer to some past testimony. So maybe strategically he means that they're doing well. In any event, the entire thing has been absolutely disgusting. We are reaching actually very quickly the end of this trial. So perhaps soon we'll know if anything is gonna come of it. I have other details for you, but Nina, I wanted to give you a chance to weigh in. I don't know, you know, how much you've been tracking this trial as it's gone on, but it's been like many trials involving women making accusations against powerful men. It's been gross. What do you think?
Yeah, it has. And I think they're making closing arguments maybe as soon as Monday. So we will see. I mean, this is just Donald J. Trump being and doing what he is. We remember that video with him saying that he could just grab him and do whatever he wants to do. And obviously, he is a common denominator. I mean, accusations are one thing. When you got several upon several upon several upon several women making similar accusations about you over the years, come on, Mr. Trump, you're the common denominator here. So in terms of the strategy, not having him testify probably is a great strategy, you know, as far as they're concerned. But we will see. I mean, it is in the hands of the judge and in the hands of the jury. We'll see what happens. But this is classic Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, I mean, what do we expect he would say if he actually were to testify? Just incredibly gross things about how E. Jean Carroll isn't attractive enough for him to rape, that sort of stuff. Just
as if he's a beauty. As if he's a beauty 100%. Himself. You know, he doesn't.
Yeah.
The man, I mean, his testimony would be similar to what he tweets out or what he puts on Truth Social. It would be the same. It would be how he interviews exactly. We know exactly what he would say because he said it before, he's done it before. There's nothing new here with Donald J. Trump. So we'll see what happens in this case.
By the way, almost the only statements from Trump that were played by his legal team to the jury are, as you say, not new. They actually played clips from an October 2022 deposition where he said he was asked whether he'd ever contacted Bergdorf's after the allegation. He says, "I didn't have to reach out to anybody. It's the most ridiculous, disgusting story. It was just made up. If it did happen, it would have been reported within minutes," contending that shoppers and employees at the very busy store would have heard a commotion and alerted authorities. Look, he's using this as his defense because he knows that some people will buy it, particularly if they like him. They're never gonna accept any of this. It doesn't matter if there's 10 or 20 or 50 or 1,000 women who come forward with these sorts of statements. It doesn't matter if their experience lines up with his own stated in the Access Hollywood tape strategy for getting women, which is to just maul them because you're a celebrity and you get to. That's effectively what his defense is at this point. And so it's gonna come down to the jury. Remember, this is a civil lawsuit, everybody. So, you know, manage your expectations for, even if the jury is on the side of E. Jean Carroll, he's not going to jail or anything like that. But we'll see if there can be any compensation whatsoever for the horrific experience that E. Jean Carroll has gone through. And in particular, because that's what this case is about, what she sees as the defamation that she's experienced by him, in her words, lying about what she underwent. As a result of this civil rape lawsuit that Trump is facing, other accusers have been forced to once again recount the experience they've had with him. And we have one who's talking about what happened at Mar-a-Lago. This is Natasha Stoyanov, former writer for People magazine, testified through tears this week that Trump forcibly kissed her against her will while showing her around his Mar-a-Lago estate just after Christmas in 2005 for an article about his first wedding anniversary with his third wife, Melania. And so I don't know what it is about like these important dates between him and Melania that seems to trigger these incidents. But if this is reminding you of what happened with Stormy Daniels just a few months after she gave birth to their first child, well, apparently the first wedding anniversary also resulted, according to Natasha Stoyanov, in this incident. She said, "The horrifying part to me was that I worried because I didn't say anything at the time. Other women were hurt by him, so I had to regret. And I feel terrible for her that she would experience that feeling. I understand why she would fear that. She sees all of these other women come out with their experiences and, you know, fears that maybe something could have been done to stop it. But to whatever extent I can reassure Natasha Stoyanov to not worry about that, I will, even though my argument is a little bit depressing. I don't think you need to worry about that because I have a feeling that you would have received the sort of response that all of these women have. All the people who love and adore and worship Trump won't accept it. Doesn't matter how public you are, doesn't matter how immediately you come out after the experience. People, especially back in 2005, didn't have a single minute to give to people making accusations against powerful men. So if, I mean, that may make us worry about a lot of other aspects of American society, but don't worry about your own culpability and what happened. Anyway, Nina, what do you think?
And your point, John, about the fact that something is triggering Trump, you know, no excuse for what he's doing. But my God, a reporter is coming there to talk about your wedding anniversary and this is what you do? Dude, I mean, whether it was a triggering event or not, just even the thought of this, she's in the home where Melania is. And this is what this man does. There's obviously something wrong with Donald J. Trump. These women are just exposing it time and time again, not just for his political side, but mainly for his personal behavior. He has no, it seems, John, he doesn't have impulse control.
Yeah.
And that impulse.
Yeah, and also, you're 100% right. But also, like, it really goes to his often stated defense against these accusations, which is, if I was going to rape someone, it wouldn't be them. They're not attractive enough. Does anyone think that this is about Donald Trump just wanting someone attractive? He's married at this point. He's been married multiple times. Yeah, he's cheating right after his wife gave birth. It's not about that at all. He likes victimizing people. He likes having people in situations where they feel they can't get away, and he preys on them. Whether it's a dressing room at a Bergdorf Goodman, whether it's someone who's been brought to sit next to him on a plane, whether it's bringing them to his house, he feels like I can do whatever I want in this situation. There's nothing they can do. That's what he likes about it. And that explains a lot of these assaults. Exactly.
Yeah, John, it's a power dynamic. And people should not forget that, even though when Trump comes out, he's so convincing in what he says, and he says it with such authority that people do tend to believe him, besides the fact that he is an authority figure, but he says things so convincingly that people can be sucked up into it. So it's not about attractive or not attractive. This is about power, pure and simple, just raw power. 100%. And John, I mean, whether it's Donald Trump, as you laid out, a lot of powerful men have done this, you know, over the course of time in this country, well, worldwide, you know, women can be victims to men, but it's especially when they are powerful, when they have a platform, and they have a cachet. And certainly Mr. Donald J. Trump, former president of the United States of America, has all that. And let us not forget what happened also to Monica Lewinsky and how she was villainized for a very long time, John. And she's just not coming out again, where there was totally a lack of understanding. Even some women's groups did not support her, even when the facts were there. Because people can allege a lot of things. Let me just put that out there. People can allege a lot of things. All allegations do not mean that they're true. But when you lay the facts out, and the facts are seen to be, you know, they're there and they're solid, then you gotta kind of say, okay, this is more true than not. And that was the case with Monica Lewinsky. In this country, for decades, allowed that young woman to suffer under the weight of powerful people. And it's just really a shame.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad that you clarified that. What you are doing is providing an amazing, robust response to generally right-wing arguments from people who don't give a damn about sexual assault when it happens. Who will throw like the label "believe women" in the face of people, implying that what it means is, oh, just anything that anybody says, whether there's evidence or not, no matter how. No, that's not what it means at all. People can be intelligent and reasonable and think about things in logical ways, as Nina just pointed out. We don't just turn off our brains. It means do not just immediately say, oh, you're accusing a guy that I like being in office, so I don't care what happened to you. Honestly, go away. We're not gonna listen to you.
That's right.
Yes. Okay, we are going to mix things up, talk about another powerful man who is alleged, appears to have taken advantage of his position, but in a very different way. So whenever we're ready, why don't we jump into this? Herschel Walker is back in the news. Don't worry, he's not running for office again just yet. No, in this case, emails have now emerged implying that he appears to have solicited literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in kind of like fake political donations that, rather than going to his campaign to be spent on his effort to become a senator, instead just went to his business, effectively went to Herschel Walker. We're still very much in the allegations phase of this reporting, but we do want to give you the details. So apparently at one point he emailed a representative for billionaire industrialist and longtime family friend Dennis Washington back in March 2022. And they were talking back and forth about, you know, money for his candidacy. So the guy decided to give him the money, and he appears, at least based on official communications, to have believed that he was giving it to the campaign to be spent on campaign stuff. But we now find out what really happened, according to emails obtained by the Daily Beast, and that have since been verified by a person with knowledge of the exchanges, showing that Walker asked Washington to wire $535,000. Directly to his company, HR Talent LLC. The emails reveal that not only did Washington do it, but he was under the impression that these were in fact political contributions. And we can show some of these emails. The important part from this is that at some point, the representative reaches out to Herschel Walker saying, after our call, a redacted name reached out to me and said with you that any funds sent to the HR Talent account can't legally be used for political purposes. So you need to sort of transfer them over. Look, we don't know what other communications might have been happening, but if we assume that all of what we're seeing is legit and these were the only communications, it seems like the billionaire wanted these to be like kind of like on the level, like as much on the level as over $500,000 being given to a super PAC that's obviously coordinating with a single candidate can ever be. But anyway, he didn't want to just give the guy $500,000. That apparently rises to the level of bribery. And so legal experts have been saying that best case scenario, this is a violation of federal fundraising rules. Worst case, it could be wire fraud. It could even be wire fraud, like defrauding the right-wing billionaire in the end. Look, we don't know in the end exactly what happened. It is possible that he refunded this money. There's no evidence of anything being done of a variety of different ways to correct the situation though. And so as of right now, it still does look really worrying. And I think this should bother a lot of different types of people, not only people who worry about money and politics, but if you're a Republican, like he lost. Maybe he could have used that $500,000 for his campaign. So anyway, Nina, what do you think about this?
I mean, why would he even in the first place ask this donor to donate it to his company? The red flag should have went off, no pun intended, to the donor right then and there. Why am I sending this money to somebody's personal company? Number two, who was managing Herschel Walker? Because any campaign manager or finance director worth their salt would not have allowed their candidate to do this without protest. And maybe, like you said, there's some things that we do not know. Maybe people on this campaign team did protest, but I'm just putting that out there.
Sure.
As somebody who has been through this and have helped people go through this, there's no way in the hell that a campaign manager or finance director would have allowed their candidate to do this without warning them that this is wrong, it is illegal, this is not where this money is supposed to go. And why did he think that this donor was gonna give him money for his talent agency? What sense does, for what? Dude, the man is supporting your run. That's just common sense. But my grandmother always said that common sense is not common. And then lastly, John, you know, in a way, it's unfortunate, but Herschel Walker, even though he lost, he fits in with a lot of elected officials that are on the Hill right now. They may not be asking multi-millionaires and billionaires to donate personally to their companies, but baby, there's so many loopholes by which they can use to get money, to get these kind of cushy platinum level jobs when they leave, and also to do insider trading. So I don't know, John, is this insider trading this? I mean, it seems like to me, Herschel Walker, unfortunately, would have fit right in with the gang down there.
Yeah, it's timed really well with AOC and Representative Gates rolling out their bill again.
Kudos to them.
Yeah, if they needed another demonstration of money in politics and all of that. By the way, I expect that today it's gonna be wall-to-wall coverage on Fox News of this story, because as we all know, they hate the deep state. They hate, you know, people manipulating politicians behind the scenes, and they also hate the elites having so much power. This is a huge amount of power. This and the Clarence Thomas thing. I mean, come on, that's their whole rundown for the full day, right? Because they don't want billionaires sticking it to the left behind silenced conservatives. I have a feeling they're gonna be fine with these. He's gonna run again, I bet. I mean, look, especially if he gets away with this, you can get so much money. He ended his campaign still having $5 million, which again, if you're a Republican in that state, how angry should you be that he had millions of dollars he could have spent to try to win that race?
They should be angry, John. You gotta use that money. I mean, you gotta use it because you don't want that what if. Fact.
Yeah,
I mean, that's why people are donating the money so that you can use it to try to win, not that for you to hoard it and save it. So,
yeah,
God, I like I said, I don't know what kind of operatives he had working on his campaign, but obviously his failing as a candidate, and I'm not saying that because he lost, I'm talking about in the way they operate.
Sure.
Is very telling.
Yeah, you could have used that $5 million to buy a more convincing fake police badge. You could have spent it to as hush money to stop some of your prior partners from coming out with their horrendous situations that they had with you.
The shade, John, the shade.
Sorry. I just try to be helpful, Nina. Anyway, okay. Well, with that, why don't we go from a Senate race of the past to a Senate race of the future? Okay, let's talk about this. There's definitely a target on Ted Cruz's back as we roll towards his reelection bid, and he's now facing another Democrat. I expect that there's probably gonna be quite a few people trying to take him down. But right now we have US House Representative for Texas, Colin Allred, civil rights lawyer, former NFL linebacker, who's gonna be going up against Ted Cruz. Here's a little bit of the video we rolled out for his announcement.
When I left the NFL, I thought my days of putting people on the ground were over. Then January 6th happened. I'm remember hearing the glass breaking and the shouts coming closer. I texted my wife, "Whatever happens, I love you." Then I took off my jacket and got ready to take on anyone who came through that door. And Ted Cruz, he cheered on the mob.
"We will not go quietly into the night."
Then hid in a supply closet when they stormed the Capitol. But that's Ted for you. All hat, no cattle. When Texans were freezing in the dark, he jetted off to Cancun. He'll do anything to get on Fox News, but can't be bothered to help keep rural Texas hospitals open. Spends months trying to whip up phony culture wars, but not a minute trying to raise wages or lower drug prices. The struggles of regular Texans just don't interest him.
So look, I'm still just now learning a little bit about Colin Allred's position on some issues. I've been doing some research on his positions on things like Medicare for All and all that stuff. But I like that ad in that it both hits Ted Cruz for all of the reasons that he's such an embarrassment. He's a coward. He's a liar. He, you know, is a political opportunist. But then also transitions back to the obligations that a senator should have to improve the life of those living in the state. So obviously we're not want to hear a lot more about that sort of thing, a positive view of the future, a plan for the future when it comes to policy from any of these candidates who are going to try to take down Ted Cruz. But you can't run against Cruz and not mock the guy. He is eminently mockable. Nina, what do you think?
Yeah, that was a touchdown. Let me use the proper sports analogy since we're talking about a former football player who certainly is comporting himself much better than Mr. Herschel Walker did. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that ad is everything. I mean, he really lays out. You took the words out of my coward is the first word that comes to mind when I think about Ted Cruz, and liar is the second. And certainly the representative made a great case as to why he should be unseated as the US senator from the great state of Texas, that the voters, in fact, in summation, really deserve much better than what they're getting from Ted Cruz. And I love that the Cancun reference that he made when Texans were freezing. And also this dude hiding in a closet, a pride closet, as the Capitol is being stormed. Meanwhile, you got the representative saying, "Hey, I'm taking off my jacket. I done called my wife, and I'm anybody that come through this door, baby, I'm ready."
100%. I like the all hat, no cattle.
Yes.
Now, in defense of Ted Cruz, he does have some kind of animal clutching his chin, or what passes for a chin. It's just not cattle. And so, look, I want to learn a lot more about Colin Allred. You know, I'm not ready to like. Yeah, I'm not Michael Shore. There's hundreds of Congress people. I don't know about all their backgrounds or whatever, but I would love to have him on the show, learn a little bit about him, and see, you know, what kind of competition he's going to have inside of the Democratic Party. Hopefully we can have a good contested primary, because gotta take down Ted Cruz. Not only because he's terrible and Texas deserves, as a person who lived in Texas for a number of years, I know that Texas deserves way better than Ted Cruz. Every state deserves better than Ted Cruz. But also, considering the incredibly difficult Senate map in this cycle, the Democrats need every opportunity they can to actually pick up a seat. And so we're gonna be reaching out to Colin Allred. I will just very briefly give you a response from Nick Maddox, spokesperson for Ted Cruz, who says, "Allred wants men to compete in women's sports, isn't serious about addressing the crisis at the border, wants to take away law-abiding Texans' guns, and is soft on punishing murderers. Bottom line, Allred is too extreme for Texas. His voting record is completely out of touch. For over a decade, Senator Cruz has been leading the fight for jobs, freedom, and security in Texas." No word on if Nick Maddox chuckled at all while reading that last section of the statement, but yeah, buddy, Ted Cruz, real leader in any aspect of his life. And I love that they had in the ad that he's trying to gin up, you know, like fake culture wars. They led with he wants men to compete in women's sports. These are not serious people. They're not good people, but they're certainly not serious people. Any final point, Nina?
They have nothing else to stand on. And it's not just Ted Cruz. This is the playbook for the entire GOP. So whether we're talking about US senators or GOP members in the House of Representatives or GOP members that lead red states like Texas or Florida, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is their playbook, John, and they're hoping that people will be so confused and not pay attention to the real issues, which is their quality of life, their jobs, their communities, for businesses, especially small businesses. What is the government doing to help those and lift up those small businesses? Or are they only answering to their corporate owner donors? That should be the debate, not this other stuff. So culture wars is all they have. And without that, they absolutely have nothing because they do nothing. You got states that are changing child labor laws, for God's sake, John, just for one example, scaling back protections for children in workplaces. And these fools sitting up here talking about sports.
100%. Yeah. Okay, well, we're gonna talk a little bit more about what's going on in some of these states on the other side of this break, but send in your comments and we'll respond during this. Okay, everybody, again, if you're just joining us, please feel free to hit the like button so people know we're live. We're about to jump into some really serious stuff, so apologies in advance, but let's talk about this. I've been talking about this for some time, but Republicans, some of them are saying, don't worry about our positions on abortion. We're not extreme or anything, we're not crazy. Well, take a look at this. A Missouri Republican has offered legislation that would allow women to be charged with murder if they get an abortion in the state. Missouri, by the way, has already been at the leading edge of taking away rights. They were the first state to enact a trigger law banning abortions when Roe v. Wade was overturned last June. The state's law now prohibits all abortions except in cases of medical emergency, which is not the provision that you might think it is. We've seen an increasing number of stories from around the country of people who have attempted to use those sorts of provisions and found that they don't reach it for one of a million different reasons. Doctors are terrified of going to jail and horrific situations have developed as a result of it. Well, even beyond that, we now have this. So Senator Mike Moon has this bill. It would give fetuses the same rights as human beings, which would allow for criminal charges to be filed against anyone who gets an abortion, helps someone get an abortion, or provides abortion care. It does allow for a duress defense and does not allow for criminal charges if the abortion was performed to save the patient's life. Again, your experience may vary. Or if a doctor accidentally aborts a fetus during a life-saving medical procedure on the pregnant person. We don't yet know if they're going to be charging people with murder if they get abortions in other states and then come back to Missouri. And I don't know exactly if this does become law, exactly what the charges will be, but I do know that they have the death penalty for murder in that state. And so just bear that in mind when supporters of this bill, like Bradley Pierce, president of the Foundation to Abolish Abortion, say, I hold the supposedly extreme position that murdering anyone should be illegal for everyone because everyone is created in the image of God. Yes. If you're pregnant, you shouldn't be murdering that fetus. It's wrong. And if you do it, you should be murdered by the state because that's right, I guess. That might be coming to Missouri soon. Nina, what do you think?
I mean, it makes total sense to me, John, what you just said. Not. You know, I mean, make this make sense. These people are so cringe and they're fringe. This is the party that purports itself to be about freedom, about individual freedom and liberty. Yet you want government just small enough to fit into a woman's uterus, her womb. That's what you want. They're cowards. They're absolute fools. They are the extremists and they are not pro-life by any stretch of the imagination, John. They are totally pro-birth because they don't give a damn about the baby. As it grows, a child, they don't care about his family. If they did, they would support increasing the minimum wage. If they did, they would want paid family and medical leave. If they did, they would support unions and the PRO Act. If they did, they would support universal lunch programs across the country. Mm-hmm. If they cared about life, they would not be trying to strip away the protections from children in terms of child labor laws. So please, America, stop being fooled by these self-righteous, do nothing, ignorant behind, I want to say something else, Republicans who are power hungry and they only want to control a woman's body. And I'm going to tell you something, if how many bills like this are passed to control men's reproductive health? I'll wait.
I can't remember one.
Because it does not happen. These people are just outrageous. And I don't know a lot of people who are pro-abortion. Matter of fact, I don't know people who are pro-abortion. I know people who are pro-choice. And that really is what this is about. And then they want to elevate who's more worthy to get it, if we should let you get it. You know, the whole divide and conquer. This is dangerous what they're doing. It's utterly ridiculous. It's un-American, unpatriotic. I mean, Democrats need to throw their words back at them. But these people are dangerous as hell.
Yeah. Look, thankfully, helping the Democrats who they do talk a little bit about abortion. I still don't think enough. But what's helping them in this case is people see through all this. They see how incredibly extreme and outrageous this is. They don't support it. Now, we don't live in a democracy, so the fact that people don't support it doesn't really seem to matter when it comes to these laws being passed. But at the very least, if you're watching this and wondering if you're out of step with the mainstream, no, you're not. These people are monsters. And I want to sort of very quickly throw, we have one more story to talk about, but before we get to that, we also have a situation developing in North Carolina. A Democrat there, Representative Tricia Cotham, suddenly changed parties, which now provides a veto-proof majority to the Republicans against Democratic Governor Roy Cooper. They recently unveiled a 12-week abortion ban. They are so proud of this ban that rather than roll it out as its own legislation, they just snuck it into another bill, by the way, because again, they know that they're not supported by the people on this. Tricia Cotham, by the way, has been an advocate for abortion rights throughout her tenure in the legislature. Earlier this year, co-sponsored a bill to codify abortion protections alongside her then Democratic colleagues. Since her party switch, she says she's open to passing abortion restrictions. So they elected her as a Democrat. They elected a Democratic governor, being told that they're going to be protected from these sorts of legal switches. And then, oh, what do you know? Like life in Jurassic Park, the right wingers found a way. They flip her over. She pulls a 180 on her supposedly core political beliefs. And now they're going to get to restrict abortion, even though people thinking that they were living in a democracy have done everything they can to stop that from happening. It's amazing how this country works.
And she wasn't true to that in the first place, John. She was a fraud from the beginning, because your party affiliation should not change your core beliefs. You know, I mean, if a party affiliation changes your core beliefs, then you had no core beliefs in the first place. She was a fraud from the beginning.
Yeah. Look, I don't know her. I don't know how she convinces herself that this isn't a massive betrayal. Obviously, people can do it. You know, Kyrsten Sinema seems pretty happy with herself. But imagine being This is the thing that makes you a national figure. This is a thing that makes you notable, is giving a middle finger to all the people who voted for you, all the people who organized for you, all the people who knocked on doors for you, all the people who donated to you. And then especially to do it to allow them to override a Democratic governor and strip people's rights away. That is like, you almost just want to stand up and clap for how above and beyond this effort to flip off democracy actually is.
I hope that her district has the power of recall.
Yeah, they don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. That's what I'm saying. I hope, because each individual state has its own rules and guidelines, but I hope that they do, because she deceived the voters. And so why should she serve out the rest of that term? Because she ran under false pretenses. Now, that's one thing to change your mind about certain issues. You know, you had an epiphany, you feel a different way. Does that mean you go ahead and change your party affiliation too before the end of the term? I mean, she owes it to the voters who put her there as a Democrat to stay that until the next election cycle at least.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, maybe ProPublica, if you're watching this, what did she get for this? What led to this massive flip, not only of party identification, but of this incredibly contentious political issue, like literally turning 180? What did she get? Is it promises of a position after this? Is it, what is it? You know, we're being reminded on a daily basis of how corrupt our political system is. I don't have any proof of anything. I just have to speculate, considering the country we live in. Because this is incredibly consequential to the state, to the people living in it. Maybe it was consequential to her and her situation as well. In any event, we are regrettably out of time for the first hour. Thank you everyone on the linear platforms listening on the podcast for watching, for supporting us. Thank you for being here. We got more coming up in the aftermath though. Reminder as always, if you're listening to the podcast, that there are other clips that you're not yet seeing if you just listen to the podcast. So go to our YouTube channel, you can get access to that. Reminder to everyone, by the way, that we also produce original content for Instagram Reels and TikTok as well. So lots to enjoy. We're gonna be back in just a few. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.